Just a quick introduction. There are very few people that I can say who are great Talmidei Chachamim and are also former classmates of mine. Rabbi Leibowitz and I were classmates in MTA. And I only say this in the greatest respect and as chizuk for all of us. Rabbi Leibowitz was great, but he wasn't a Talmid Chacham in MTA. What happened? Well, what happened was he started to learn and he never stopped. And he kept learning. He went to Karen Biavna, came back to Yeshiva, NYU, and he never stopped. And before you knew it, a couple years later, he turned around. He's become a great Talmid Chacham. So if anyone here is sitting and thinking, can I ever be a Talmid Chacham? So the answer is, and keep learning, and then one day you'll be a Talmid Chacham. Rabbi Leibowitz is well known as a great Magid Shir in Yeshivas DRS and Leib Shlomo. We have half of his Yeshivas Leib Shlomo with us in camp. I think you're the biggest feeder in percentage to our camp pass staff. Thank you, Sussman and Palya. And also a well-known Rav in North Woodmere, and also very well known for his over 4,000 shiurim on YU Torah, catching up very quickly with Rav Shechter. So it's really a big schuss to have him with us in camp, and b'chavad Rav, Rav Leibowitz.
It's always great cover to be here. Just to let you know, Rabbi Willig was a Talmud Chacham in MTA. Significant Talmud Chacham. It's really a great sechus that you have to have people of the stature of Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Weinberg and Rabbi Michelle of Judah. Tremendous, tremendous people, tremendous tzaddikim, tremendous Talmidei Chachamim. And you should take advantage of that, because people like that are not normally found, you know, roaming the streets. You don't find so many people like that in the course of your lifetime. And to have them all in one place with you over the summer is something that's very special indeed, and you should really appreciate that. So I was talking to half of Leib Shlomo about what I should speak about tonight in Camp Hask. They said that some of the kids are expecting a concert, because apparently, in my old picture on YU Torah, I had a little bit of a fuller face, and I was a little bit darker, and I used to bear a striking resemblance to Shweki. So, I was once stopped in the 7-Eleven parking lot. I got out of my car, and a woman is staring at me the entire time as I'm getting out of my car, and I'm like, why is that woman staring at me? And I go into 7-Eleven, and I buy whatever I buy, my Slurpee or something, and then I come back out, and she's still staring at me the whole time. And I'm going back to my car, and as I'm getting into my car, she says, Shweki? And I said, no. She said, oh, come on, really? So I said, should I sing and prove it to you? It happened to be a week later, I was in that same parking lot, and someone came over to me and said, Rabbi Leibowitz? I'm like, nah, Shweki. But the decision was made that we'll discuss a little bit about Inyanim of Churban, because we're in the period of time of 3 weeks, what's known as the Bein HaMetzarim, which is obviously a very, very sad and difficult time on the Jewish calendar. And in case we ever have a difficult time relating to Tzaros, it seems that every year at this time, Kadosh Baruch Hu comes with some reminders of the Tzaros that Klal Yisrael can experience. But it's rare that we're able to really connect to Churban. And whenever I think about Churban, whenever I try to internalize Churban for myself, what it means, Churban Beis HaMikdash, what it means to have a Churban Yerushalayim, I always think of a mashal of the Dubna Magid that I'm sure most of you have heard, and still it's worth reviewing, because I know I've heard it, and it still is mechazik me every year. It puts things in perspective for me. Dubna Magid tells the following story. There was a couple that was married and they were having trouble conceiving, having a difficult time having children. And it was many, many years. It was very, very difficult. And finally, miracle of miracles, the wife became pregnant. And they were all excited for 9 months, planning, what are we going to name him if it's a boy? What are we going to name her if it's a girl? You know, thinking how their lives are about to change for the better and having grand plans for the future, what it's going to be like. And the moment comes where she goes into labor and they rush to the hospital. They have that euphoric experience. You know, he's not even sure, it's like this out-of-body experience. Is this really happening? And they rush to the hospital and they get there and he goes into the delivery room together with his wife. And at some point during the delivery, he sees the look on the doctor's face. And he sees that something's not right. And sure enough, just a moment or two later, the doctor says, "Get him out of here." And some nurses grab him and pull him out of the room. "I'm sorry, sir, something went wrong. We'll have to, you can't be in here now." And he's standing outside, he doesn't know what to do with himself. He's pacing and he's thinking and he has no idea what's happening. And a short while later, the doctor comes out and the doctor says, "Listen, sir, I'm sorry to tell you that we have a very terrible situation going on. Your wife is having a very, very difficult labor, and she might make it, or your baby might make it, but they won't both make it. And you're going to have to make a decision. Your baby or your wife?" And to him, he loved his wife. There was no question it was going to be his wife, but he wanted to talk to his wife first. And he goes into the room, and they let him speak with her for a few moments. And he says to her, explains the situation and says, "Obviously, you know, Rabbeinu Shalom blessed us with this pregnancy. I'm sure he'll bless us with another one if we daven hard enough." And she says, "No, no, no. You don't get to choose me. I choose the baby. We work too hard. We daven too hard. It's too much to give up. I choose the baby." The husband with tears in his eyes, please, begging her, pleading with her, "Please, it's your choice, it's your life, but please." And she says, "No, I trust you, you're going to raise him the right way. And he's going to be the Ben Torah that we hoped he would be. But it's the baby, it's not me." Having no choice, the doctors do whatever they can to save her and the baby, but it's not going to work. The baby survives and the wife doesn't. And every single year, this baby Menachem, they call him, the Lashon of Nechama, that the father hopes to see in this child, every single year, his birthday is his mother's yahrzeit. Every year it comes with that reminder. And finally, 13 years later, he's a bar mitzvah. And his father says, "Listen, Menachem, you're 13 years old already, you're a big boy. In addition to your bar mitzvah pshetel, whatever shtickle Torah you're going to say, do me a favor. Say something about your mother. Say something about what she gave up for you, what she means to you." And he gets up and he delivers his pshetel beautifully. And then he says, "And thanks to my mom, because without her I wouldn't be here." That was it. Like very coldly. The father can't contain himself. He says, "That's it? That's what you have to say? Thanks to my mom? Do you know what she gave up for you? Do you know who she was? Do you know what kind of person she was?" So the kid says to the father, "Listen, Dad, you were married to her for many years. You were in love with her. You had a life together. You knew her better than anybody in the world knew her. For you, it was a significant loss. I understand why you're so emotional. But I never met her. What do you expect from me? How am I supposed to feel something that I just don't know? I don't know her. I didn't know her. You describe these grand ideas of her chesed and her personality and her smile and her this. I don't know, radiant smile. What does that mean? Half the people I know are described that way. Well, what do you want from me?" And the Dubna Magid says, hopefully it's not a true story, but he says it's a mashal. We We go through this period every year where we're supposed to lament and mourn Churban Yerushalayim, Churban Beis HaMikdash. And the Ribbono Shel is crying, and the Ribbono Shel wants us to cry. And we have this sense when we turn to the Ribbono Shel, we say, Ribbono Shel, you met her. You knew her. You had over 8 centuries where you had a Beis HaMikdash, where you knew what it meant. We've never seen it. What do you want from us? How are we supposed to cry? How are we supposed to feel something? So I think it's always important to try to find hadracha. It sounds silly a little bit, but to try to find hadracha in how to mourn. To focus our mourning, to focus our thoughts during this time. Soloveitchik explains that when a person goes through Rachmana Litzlan, a personal avelus, you don't need to tell them to mourn. It hits them like a ton of bricks. You know what you need to tell them? Eventually that they have to get on with life. And the halacha recognized that, and that's why there's aninus, and then there's avelus of shiva, and then shloshim a little lighter, and then yud beis chodesh, till you become a normal person again. Never forget, but you become a normal person again. Because it hits you like a ton of bricks, and you have to work your way out. But when it comes to the avelus of the Beis HaMikdash, it's the opposite. We have to work our way in. It didn't hit us like a ton of bricks. We never felt it. We never saw it. We have to work our way toward that feeling, toward that emotion. And we don't have it yet. So it's very important to focus and to try to come out with a coherent message. What should we be thinking about? What should we be looking for? What should we be emphasizing? There's so many ideas that could be shared. I'd like to share with you one idea that really the entire content I heard from Rav David Foreman a while ago, but I'm going to add a little bit, very, very little bit, that I think really helps us focus. And really all it is, it's pshat in a Gemara, and it's a Gemara that probably everybody in this room has either learnt inside or at least heard more than once in their lives. But some of the details of the Gemara we tend to forget. You know, even if we do a good job remembering our learning, very few people have that ability to remember details. To remember all the details of a sugya. Even if you work very hard to say, okay, I know what's on this omen, I know what's on that omen, I know where that sugya is, but to remember the details, very, very hard. So let's chazer a little bit. There's a Gemara Maseches Gittin on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. It's one of those Gemaras you're allowed to learn on Tisha B'Av. Havubu Ahanu Biryoni. When Yerushalayim was surrounded and nothing was able to be brought in and out, and they had to figure out what to do. Should they try to make peace with the enemy armies on the outside, or should they try to fight, stage a rebellion where they were obviously going to lose? So there were some, I guess for lack of a better translation, some thugs. You know, some people who were fighters. And Amruluhu Rabbanon, the Rabbanon said to them, listen, Nefuk Benavit Shalom Abadayu, we should go make Shalom, it's our best chance. We don't have an army, we're not going to win anything. Lo Shefkinu. They wouldn't allow them to. Amruluhu, they said, no, Nefuk Benavit Kirba Badayu. Amruluhu Rabbanon, they said, let's go make war. And the Rabbanon said, Lo Mistayem Ilse, it's not going to help, it's not going to do anything. So what do you do when you're in an argument? We could choose path A, we could choose path B, which one should we choose? So if you don't want to play fair, you take away the other guy's option. There's option A is his option, option B is my option. If I want to make sure that I win, all I have to do is make sure that his option no longer becomes an option. So what did they do? They burnt down the entire food supply of Yerushalayim. There was famine. People had no food. Now what are you going to do? We have no choice. We have to fight. And the Gemara tells us the famine was so awful and so terrible and so unbearable that there was a woman, Marta Bas Baitos, Atirtu de Yerushalayim Havya. She was the wealthiest woman of Yerushalayim. And she sent her a messenger. She had messengers to send out to shop for her. Every once in a while in the five towns, I spent most of my life in the five towns, I grew up in the five towns. Every once in a while you stand behind someone's housekeeper on the supermarket checkout line. People have other people to shop for them. So she sent. the woman to go shop for her. And she said, do me a favor, you know what I love to eat? You know, in Bistro, they have a house steak. It's phenomenal. Just go get me, the Gemara doesn't say it exactly like this, but just go get me the house steak. And the woman goes, says, do you have the house steak? And they say, we're out of steak. What do you mean? You're Bistro. You can't be out of steak. No, sorry, we're out of steak. Those guys, they burned down all the, you know, there's nothing left. But we have some chicken left. All right, chicken, whatever. I was once on a date and the girl ordered chicken. No, this was a woman. So, okay, she goes back, she tells the woman, they have chicken. She says, okay, they have chicken, get me the chicken. She goes back and she asks for the chicken and they say, no, we're out of chicken. Since you went back and forth, we're already out. And it goes on and on. She says, okay, don't go to Bistro, go to Sushi Mizian, go to the pizza shop, get me pizza, get me french fries, get me anything. Get me the food you can find in any store in the entire five towns. Sushi. Anything. Whatever's most accessible, most available. And by the time she goes back, nothing's left. It's all gone. And Nebuch, the smarter Baspaitus, finds a fig that Rabbi Tzaduk had eaten. And it was just the shell, the peel of the fig after Rabbi Tzaduk had sucked out the juices. And she found it discarded on the floor. Gross. Going through someone else's garbage to scrounge for food. And she eats it because she's starving. But she's so used to the finer things in life, she drops dead from eating it. So Gemara says, well, who's this Rabbi Tzaddik? What happened with Rabbi Tzaddik? Gemara says, well, Rabbi Tzaddik had a tremendous amount of foresight, and he knew that the Churban was coming. So for 40 years in advance of the Churban, he fasted every day for 40 years. And he was so emaciated, he was so skinny, that when he would eat food, you'd see it go through his system. And he couldn't eat solid foods. You know, like after the Holocaust, when the American soldiers came into the concentration camps and they handed out chocolate bars, not realizing that they were killing the children that they were giving the chocolate bars to because they just couldn't handle food like that. So what did Rabbi Tzaddik do? He would take, they'd give him a fig and he would suck out the juices. He couldn't eat the food. He would just suck the juices out of the food. And he would discard the peel, the rest of it. And that's what she ended up eating. So the Gemara goes on and tells us that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the chief rabbi at the time, and he had a cousin who was in the other group, the other party, who was in the other party, the group that burnt down the whole food supply. And together they hatched a plan to get Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai out, to get him outside of the gate so that maybe you can negotiate something. And you know the story. He had to pretend to be dead, and they brought him out, and as they were being brought out, the guard said, well, let's stab him, make sure he's dead. That's not a normal thing to do, by the way. Normally you just check for a pulse. Let's stab him, make sure he's really dead. He said, no, then they're going to say you mutilated the bodies of their great rabbis. You know, that's not a good thing. That's not going to be good in the media. Even the New York Times is going to report that favorably. So what do you do about that? So they say, okay, fine, he's dead. Okay, they had another eight, so let's push him. Okay, fine, he's dead, let him go through. And he goes through and he sees the general and he says to the general, Shalom Alech Malka, Shalom Alech Malka, Shalom Aleichem King, Shalom Aleichem King. And the general looks at him and says, you should be put to death for what you just said. I'm not the king, that's Mori B'malchus. You're rebelling against the king by calling me a king. And then sure enough, just then someone comes and says, oh, the emperor died, you just became emperor, Mazel Tov. And he's like very impressed. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai already knew that he was a melech, and Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai knew it because only a melech could conquer Yerushalayim with a mikdash in it. Can't be handed over, he knew from a pasuk, can't be given over to anybody else. So he's all excited. He was actually in the middle of changing his shoes. I'm not sure how this conversation went, but he was in the middle of changing his shoes as he was having this conversation with Yochum and Zakkai. And now he's told, okay, you got to get going. You're the new king. So he's trying to put his other shoe back on, but it doesn't go on because for some reason his shoe doesn't fit anymore. And Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai, apparently a very great doctor, was able to diagnose the problem in a second. He had a Dr. House moment. He was able to look and say, now I know who watches TV. He was able to look and say right away, oh, I know exactly what happened. You had good news, and when you get good news, your feet swell. I'm told when you get pregnant, your feet swell. I don't know, but apparently when you get good news, that's good news too. Your feet swell. So your shoe's not going to fit. So he, strange, unusual conversation about podiatry. And ultimately, before he leaves, the general says, the new emperor says, okay, bayi minai midi de'etein lach. I'll give you three wishes. What can I give you? You get three wishes. And like the genie says, no wishing for more wishes. So what do you wish for? What do you want? So Amar Lei says three things. Tein li Yavne v'chachameha. I want Yavne and its wise men. I want the Talmidei Chachamim and the Yeshiva and Yavne to survive. V'shushilta d'Rabbi Gamliel. I want the family of Rabbi Gamliel, who descends from the Malchus Beis David. I want them to survive. V'asvasa d'masyon le'le Rabbi Tzadok. And I need a doctor, I need medical attention for Rabbi Tzadok. Remember, Rabbi Tzadok fasted for 40 years. He needs an IV, he needs something. Got to get him some medical attention. Those are my three wishes. The Gemara discusses, should he have perhaps wished for more, but he was afraid if he was going to ask for too much, it wouldn't have been given to him. Okay, so that's the story that the Gemara has. It goes on and on, but you know, we don't have all night just for that story. So, simple question. If you have three wishes, and the whole Jewish people is suffering, everybody is suffering, the starvation is overwhelming, people have nothing to eat, so you ask for a doctor for a particular guy, okay, he was a great leader. You ask for one family? What exactly was behind these three wishes? Why does he specifically ask for the rabbis, Rabbi Gamliel's family, and Rabbi Tzadok to have a doctor? Off the top of our heads, if we would have guessed, without knowing the end of the Gemara, what his three wishes were, maybe Yavne v'Chachameha would have made the list. Probably none of the others would have made our lists of his three wishes. So something must have been going on in his head. What was going on in his brain? So it's important to take a step back and think about how we relate to Churban. In Halacha, it's not a Halacha Shir, but in Halacha, there are things we do, or we're supposed to do, all the time, that somehow relate to Churban. In fact, there are two sugyas in Shas that talk about the idea of making a zecher l'churban, a way to remember the churban. One sugya is the Gemara Masechta Sukkah Daf Mem Aleph. The Gemara says that after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that even though the din d'oraisa is ulekachtum lachem, that you take the dalad minim b'yom harishon only on the first day of Sukkot outside of Yerushalayim, outside of the old city of Yerushalayim. Rabbi Yochum Mizakai said, to remember Yerushalayim, we're going to take the Aluminium all 7 days of Sukkot. Zecher l'Mikdash. And the Gemara says, oh, how do you know that you're supposed to do a Zecher l'Mikdash? Minolan davdin on Zecher l'Mikdash. So the Gemara says, a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Sion hi doresh ein la, Yirmiyahu laments. Yirmiyahu does a lot of lamenting. He was the Navi of Churban. And Yirmiyahu laments, oh, Sion's gone. Where are the people seeking out Sion? Oh, he's looking for people to seek out Zion. It must be that that's what you're supposed to do. That Mechal Dabayi Trisha. Apparently you're supposed to look for Zion and think about Zion, think about Zion, think about Yerushalayim. So that's where Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai got the idea. But then there's another Gemara. The Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra Daf Samech Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us, right after the Churban HaBayis, people were overwhelmed with grief. They didn't know what to do. Life had just changed in a way that was going to create a new reality for them, and they had no idea how to deal with that new reality. They felt like things had to change in their daily lives. They can't allow themselves to smile. They cannot allow themselves to be happy because this is just too terrible, too overwhelming. So what do? So they decided, you know what? We're not going to eat meat and drink wine. Not during the 9 days. Ever. Not going to eat meat and drink wine. How could we? Without a Beis HaMikdash, we're going to eat meat and drink. We're not going to do it. So Rabbi Yoshua says to them, why aren't you guys eating meat and drinking wine? So they said, think about it. Meat represents karbanos. Wine, they were menasech on the Mizbeach, they poured on the Mizbeach. And now we don't have karbanos on the Mizbeach. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't get to eat meat and drink wine. We're not going to eat meat and drink wine. So Rabbi Yeshua says, okay, I hear. So lechem lo nocha. You shouldn't eat bread either then. Because you know, there was a thing called a karban mincha. And a karban mincha was essentially loaves of bread. We don't often think of it this way. The lechem apanim, the 12 loaves that were on the shulchan constantly. That was a karban mincha. There were loaves of bread. So you shouldn't eat loaves of bread either. They said, you know what? You're right. We didn't think of that. We're not going to eat bread either. So he said, okay. But then maybe you shouldn't eat fruits either. Because there's a mitzvah of bringing bikurim. You have to bring the first fruits to Yerushalayim. He said, you know what? We didn't think of that. You're right. We're not going to eat fruits either. Not any fruits. The fruits that you can bring bikurim from. We'll eat other fruits. We'll eat apples and oranges. So he said, okay, but you probably shouldn't drink water either then. Because they used to pour water, they used to have Nisach HaMayim and the Yom Tov of Sukkos. You could actually walk the path from the Shiluach where they got the water. You don't go all the way up, but you could see the path that they used to take. So we don't have Nisach HaMayim, you probably shouldn't drink water. So they weren't ready to jump on that one. Because they realized they have nothing to do. So they said, so Rabbi Yeshua says to them, listen, you're going to have to get on with life. But shalol yis'abel kol ikr e'efsha. To not be mis'abel at all, that's obviously impossible. You have to have avelus. It's a terrible gzeira made against Klal Yisrael. We have to feel something. Lis'abel yosir midai? To have too much avelus? Can't do that either. E'efsha. We don't make gezeiros that people cannot withstand. We cannot withstand it. You can't go without eating these things, without drinking these things. So what should you do? So he suggests a series of behaviors. When you build your new fancy house, leave an amma by an amma unfinished. Unfinished, not painted a different color, unfinished. It's when you build a house, not when you buy a house. It's just if you're worried that in your house you don't have an amma by an amma. Someone in my community bought a house, and they bought it, but they painted an amma by an amma black. You see that sometimes. Or they put a beautiful piece of art that is Yerushalayim related. So I called up Mori Verabi, Rabbi Willig, senior. And I said, is there any kiyum of the amma by an amma of black paint? He said, it's a zecher to the fact that there's a halacha of zecher l'churban. It's not a zecher l'churban, but you know, it reminds me that there exists such a halacha. Okay. So he said, you should do that. When you set the table, leave something off. Be mishayer davar muat. When a woman sets up her jewelry and her perfumes, leave a little something off. Something should be incomplete. So the Gemara says, where do we know this from? How do we know you're supposed to do these kinds of things? The Gemara says, Eifer Makla Barosh Chassanim, you should put ashes on the head of a chassan, things like this. Someone says, how do we know he's supposed to do these things? So we already know the answer. How do I know you're supposed to remember the Beis HaMikdash? We saw the other Gemara, right? The Gemara said, it's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Tzioni Doresh Einla, Mechal Dabayi Drisha. Great, so we know you're supposed to be Doresh Tzion. We know it already. But the Gemara gives a different answer. The Gemara says, it's a pasuk in Tehillim. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim tishkach yimini tidvak lishoni lechiki. But we're supposed to remember Yerushalayim. Even Al Rosh Simchasi, the Gemara says Al Rosh Simchasi is the ashes on that of the chasen. That's what the Nosei Kelim say on the side of the Shulchan Aruch. When they put the ashes on that of the chasen, he should say, Im eshkachech Yerushalayim, because that's why they're putting it on his head. I was once at a wedding, and they started singing Im eshkachech, you know, at the end of the chuppah. Very somber time, you know, that's why we break the glass, also to bring down the simcha, because after the Chorban we can't have that same level of simcha. And there were two people who probably did not learn in the same yeshiva that I learned in, sitting behind me. And they were talking to each other, and I heard one say to the other, what are they doing? Never seen this before. And the other one says, it's a YU minhag. So I turned around and I said, it's a Gemara! I didn't, but I wanted to. I really wanted to. It's a Gemara in Bava Basra. Im eshkachech Yerushalayim. That's why we put the Eivar Makla. So Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, it's very strange to have the same halacha in two sugyas in Shas. The examples of the halacha in the two sugyas are totally different examples. There's no overlap of examples. One sugya gives examples of using esrog for 7 days, having the whole second day of Pesach be asur to eat the chadash, the new grain. And the other sugya gives about the ama by an ama, the ashes, the leaving a little bit off of the jewelry. Not even the same examples of halacha. And there are two different psukim. Why would there be two different psukim for the same halacha? So he pointed out that obviously it's not the same halacha. They sound the same, but they're not the same. And there are two elements over here. It's what he termed, even though the Gemara doesn't use this exact terminology, it's what he termed Zecher leMikdash and Zecher leChorban. It's important to do both, and those are not the same thing. Before my oldest son's bar mitzvah, I had the opportunity to bring him to Eretz Yisrael. The yeshiva sent me to Eretz Yisrael, so for one ticket I was able to spring. So I got to bring him to Eretz Yisrael. And we were going on a tour of the old city. And the tour guide said to my then 12-year-old son, you see that dome over there? What's that spot about? And my son said, well, that's where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be very soon. And the guy was so excited. He said, no one says that. You know, no one says, that's where we're going to build. That's where the Beis HaMikdash is. They always say, that's where historically the Jewish people used to have a temple. That's where now there's a mosque. We don't think positive. They don't think about, yeah, we're going to have a Mikdash. We have a future. There's such a thing as Jewish destiny. All of the history that we've been through is there to lead us to a Jewish destiny. We're actually going to have that. Zecher leMikdash keeps alive the idea that we know how to handle a Mikdash. We remember what a Mikdash is like. We remember how beautiful it is. We remember how empowering it is. We remember how amazing it is to connect to the Ribbono Shlom, to have a Makom Ashras HaShechina. And we need to remember it because we're going to have it again. You know, the Chafetz Chaim said we have to learn Kachim. Why do we have to learn Kachim? Not because it's a Meis Mitzvah and no one's learning it. He says we have to learn Kachim because you know what's going to happen? Tomorrow the Beis Mitzvah is going to come down, whatever, let's say the Beis Mitzvah is going to come down from Shemayim, and it's going to land right there, and we're going to say, awesome, we have a Beis Mitzvah. What do we do with it? We're not going to have any clue. How do you get that Malika thing right? I can't. How do you do it? We're not going to have any idea. So we have to learn, we have to be hopeful, and we have to yearn for it. So there is a whole set of halachos that reminds us of the practices of what it meant to have a Mikdash. And it's not negative, it's positive. Lulav taken for 7 days, just like we did in the Mikdash. Zecher l'mikdash kihilal, on the night of the Seder. What do? Korech. We have the matzah and the marah together, and we put it all together. Zecher l'mikdash kihilal, we make a sandwich. It's not really a sandwich, it's a mistranslation of the word korech, one of my big pet peeves. The word korech in all the shas never ever means sandwich. In the Hebrew language, it doesn't mean sandwich. Any Israelis here? No, no Israelis? What does korech mean? Korech means to wrap, because the real matzah was soft, so they were able to wrap it. The Korban Pesach was like, it was some lamb and lettuce, you know, the maror, and a lacha. It must have been delicious. But anyway, that's Zecher l'Mikdash Kehillah. That's positive. We count Sfiras HaOmer b'zman hazeh, even though we don't have a Korban Omer. Zecher l'Mikdash. And on and on. The Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch. You ever notice on Hoshana Rabbah in Shul? You go into Shul and Hoshana Rabbah, there's always a kid there with a whole bunch of buckets full of aravos. Is everyone so ill-prepared they need a kid there selling aravos in the Shul? Couldn't they just buy it like we bought our lulav and we bought our esrog and we buy our machzor and we buy everything else that we bring to Shul with us? That's got to be sold in the Shul. Why is that got to be sold in the Shul? The Rama says, it's a zecher l'mikdash. The Shluchei Beis Din would bring the aravos. Siman Tafrei Samach Dalet, the Rama writes this way. We remember what it means. We go around the Hoshanos, zecher l'mikdash, and they would go around the Mizbeach. Ner Chanukah in Shul, zecher l'mikdash. But then, on the other hand, even Kriyas Parsha Shkolim, when we read the first of the Dalet Parshiyos, to remind everyone, bring your matzah shekel. What matzah shekel? Bring your matzah shekel. Zecher l'mikdash. Then there's the other side, the more negative side, the side where we actually mourn. Zecher l'churban. And that's what the Gemara in Maseches Bava Basra was talking about. Not to do anything that's directly mikdash related, just don't be so happy. Just to take down our level of simcha a little bit. And that's the Gemara in Gittin when it talks about not listening to music. Not during 3 weeks, ever. Okay, we can't survive like that. That's what the Shulchan Aruch Paskins and Ebenezer, we break a kos under the chuppah. That's not remembering anything they did in the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't break cups. We do that to bring down the level of simcha a little bit. The egg on the night of the Seder that many people in Klal Yisrael have a minhag to do, Shulchan Aruch and Tafayin Gimel Sif Dalet. It's a Meichel Avelim, it's a food of Avelus. Brings down the Simcha, because we're not having a Seder the way we're supposed to. Gemara in Brachos, Asu L'Malei Piv Tzchok, you're not allowed to be overly happy without the Beis HaMikdash. On and on. So two totally different paths that we're supposed to take simultaneously. We're supposed to be mourning the loss, and at the same time hopeful for the future. And they're not paths that lead in different directions. They actually join and lead in the same direction because the Gemara tells us, Kol Misabel Yerushalayim, someone who's Misabel Yerushalayim properly, only then, only when one re-experiences Jewish history and keeps it clear in his mind, only then will he experience Jewish destiny. So, to ensure Jewish survival and Jewish identity, and to enable us to remember Yerushalayim. That was the challenge Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was faced with. You get three wishes, and he knew Churban was happening. And he needed to think of three things that are going to aid Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was a hero of Jewish history. He was the hero of the post-Churban era. We would have been clueless without his guidance. His skin, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he made several takanos to teach us how to deal with the coming millennia of Jewish history. And he had three wishes to sort of make that work. So his first wish is, everything the Jewish people do starts with the heartbeat of the Jewish people. And the heartbeat of the Jewish people is the Torah. The Torah is our breakfast, our lunch, and our supper. It's our heart and soul. It's how we define ourselves. Rav Gifter, in a famous drasha, once said, I am not an Orthodox Jew. I am a Torah Jew. It's a literature way of saying Torah, if you didn't get it. Not Orthodox. Orthodoxy doesn't mean anything. I'm Torah. So knowing that he can't ask for Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's first request, Tein li Yavne v'chachamecha. Give me Yavne. As long as there's Torah being learned, Klal Yisrael will survive. Last summer, my wife and I had an opportunity to take a Shabbos off, a little vacation. It's a rare opportunity. So we weren't buying plane tickets anywhere. So I said, okay, we have to find somewhere within driving distance so we can go for a weekend. But it had to be somewhere that there's an Orthodox shul, somewhere I could daven. There are enough places in Orthodox shuls, you don't have to go find the one place that doesn't have a minyan, you know. So she did some research online, and we went to Providence, Rhode Island. Why Providence, Rhode Island? I don't know, it's the first thing that popped up on a Google search. Fine. So I was staying at this very nice hotel that we got some great deal on, and it was about a 2 mile walk to shul. And the walk to shul was through neighborhoods that I am not accustomed to walking through. Put it that way. Safe to say that at some points I was the only Jew within a mile. So I was walking along the highway, and this municipal worker, this guy, you know, with one of those jackhammer things, like he stops. It's like 98 degrees outside, and I'm in a suit and tie, pulled up like this. I was past the Eruv, not holding any jacket at this point. I'm wearing it. I thought about just discarding it. I'm just walking, and he stops me, and he says, what's that? I was like, oh my gosh. How far from New York am I? I said, I'm Jewish. He said, oh, you're Jewish? So, like, what's the difference between Jews and Catholics? What's the difference between Jews and... Where do you begin, you know? So the best answer is, Jews live Torah. Every doctor, lawyer, and accountant, not just seminary students, learns Torah, lives Torah. It affects our every decision in life. It affects everything we do. It's who we are. But again, I didn't say that. I just said we don't believe in Yashka. He was shocked. What? Are you serious? But that is, it's who we are. That's how we define ourselves. It's an amazing thing. What was the yeshiva called? Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says, I want this yeshiva. Tainli Yavne v'chachamecha. The yeshiva was actually called Kerem B'Yavne. So they named the modern Kerem B'Yavne after that original Kerem B'Yavne. It says, the Gemara says it's called Kerem B'Yavne because they sat in rows. Shuros, shuros, kikerem. You ever see a vineyard? It's nicely lined up in rows. And that's how the Talmidim used to sit. It's takahow we sat in Kerem B'Yavne also. But if you think about it, Kerem B'Yavne is really an ironic name. Yavne is full of sand dunes. You know, it's not really a place where you could build a vineyard, where you could plant a vineyard. But that was good for the point. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was saying, we're going to survive with Torah, and you know something about Torah? It could survive anywhere. It can survive in Yavne. Like a vineyard surviving in Yavne, you could plant Torah in anywhere USA, and it will flourish. And that's the first thing Klal Yisrael needed after the Churban. And maybe that's our first point of chizik. To me, when I come here, every time that I come here, I remember the summer after my first year in Israel, when I didn't have the guts, the courage, the chesed gene, I don't even know what to call it, to spend the summer here. So I told all my friends, my parents are making me do summer school, even though it wasn't true, and I did summer school. So don't believe any of... No, I'm just joking. You can believe your friends. Your friends aren't liars. And I remember a friend of mine was here. And he called me up. I think it was the second night of camp. And 19-year-old guy tough guy. He was crying. It's so much. I'm so tired. It's so exhausting. I don't know if I can do this. And we came on his day off, and we were mechazik him. And you know the story, you know how this goes. It's so much, and it's so overwhelming. But then it becomes something amazing. Because you're putting so much, so many kochos into something. And it's something so good. And it changes your lives, and you know it changes your lives more than it changes your campers' lives. And for me to see a room after a day like I know you all just had, it's full of people who came to hear a little bit of Torah. Very little bit of Torah. No. But a little bit of Torah. It's unbelievable. That no matter where we are, if you can learn Torah after the days you just had, on your worst day, your most challenging day in whatever profession you choose, you will probably not be as tired as you are now. As emotionally drained as you are now. And if you could do it now, you'll be able to do it for the rest of your lives. It's an unbelievable training ground. To set aside that time for Torah, that's our heartbeat. That's what keeps Klal Yisrael going. And then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai has a second wish. The second wish is, we need to have a Zecher LeMikdash. We need to remember the glory of Yerushalayim. We need to remember the greatness of Yerushalayim. Give me the Shushilta de Rabban Gamliel, the family that can trace its lineage back to David HaMelech. A Zecher LeMikdash. To remember what's so great about Yerushalayim in the first place. A very close friend of mine is making Aliyah in 2 weeks. And his son happens to be in Camp Keli, where I am this summer. And he called me last week and he said, please do me a favor. Go over to my son and make sure he understands what a great zechus it is for us to be going to Eretz Yisrael. Make sure he doesn't think that Eretz Yisrael is just a war zone. That all it is a place where you have to run for cover, Rachmana Litzlan. Make sure he knows how beautiful it is, how amazing it is. I spent all this time, but hearing all this news, you know, being bombarded with all this news. He was afraid about the child's attitude, and I started to think we should all be afraid about our attitude. When we see Eretz Yisrael, when we go to Eretz Yisrael, we should be hearing the footsteps of Mashiach. We should see the building that's been happening, the Torah that's been happening. We should look at a dome, at a mosque, and say, that's the future place of the Beis HaMikdash. It's not some historical area. We have a Mikdash to look forward to. And finally, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, we need a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok. Why a doctor for Rabbi Tzadok? Because there once lived a Jew who dedicated 40 years of his life to mourning and lamenting the Churban and hoping and praying that it didn't come. And we need to remember that Zecher L'Churban is important also. We need to remember that we are in Avelus. We need to keep the enormity of the tragedy in the center of our consciousness. Notice that Rabbi Tzadok drank the juice out of the pri, but he discarded the shell. And maybe there's symbolism, there's imagery in that. That one day we're not going to have the infrastructure. We're going to be missing the shell, the physical infrastructure. It's not going to be in Jewish hands, Rabbi Tzadok realized. But we need to keep the contents, the mamashos, of the holy city alive. And Marta Bas Baitus, what does she go for? Just the shell, the physical, external part. And she latches onto that, but she's missing all the beauty, she's missing the inside. And she can't survive with that kind of attitude. Because we have to realize that Yerushalayim is not the city of our history only, it's the city of our future. And this touches on the greatest theme of the 3 weeks. That due to terribly unfortunate circumstances, we were able to witness, we were zocheh to witness in recent weeks. And that is, that what's so special about Yerushalayim, it's Ir Shechubra LaYachtav. It's the city that unites Klal Yisrael. So if we want all of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's ideas to work, the underpinning of it all, what has to be behind it all, is that we're Chubra LaYachtav. Not just connected to the city, that we're connected to each other, that it connects Klal Yisrael to each other. We have shown that we're able, we're capable of such achdus in the worst of times. And hopefully the Ribbono Shel Olam sees that if we're capable of that kind of achdus in the worst of times, think about what we could accomplish with that kind of achdus in the best of times. And that's going to hopefully make the Ribbono Shel Olam take notice and decide that since we know how to be misabel during this period, we know how to value the Ribbono Shel Olam's Torah, we know how to view the history and the destiny of Yerushalayim, and we know how to come together to do it. But the Ribbono Shel Olam is going to say it's enough and it's time for Tisha B'Av of this year to be a celebration of our brand new Beis HaMikdash.